time is. I was told my sponsors always said, you say yes. So I do. But because I'm in Mokena and my brain doesn't always work with the time stuff, I ended up calling Joe and saying, now what time again? And that is humility. So before I start, I want to read, and we might have already read it, but to read the abstinence definition. And I am Karen, and I will qualify myself in a moment. The act of refraining from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors while working toward or maintaining a healthy body weight. This is, to me, the most important part of the definition. Spiritual, emotional, and physical recovery is the result of working and living the Overeaters Anonymous 12-step program on a daily basis. I love our definition, and I love that they our new definition. My name's Karen. I am a recovering ING compulsive overeater. I have been working an imperfect program, working on my spiritual, my emotional, and my physical recovery since August of 1987. I have been released of 50 pounds, and today I live program. That's how I live my life, and I am always, when I have to speak, I am always moved to emotion and often to tears because I never can figure out how I got this when I know so many people that didn't get it. So I'm going to just start with a little bit about myself and how I got into the program. So, I know we talk about what it was like, how we got here, what it is now, and then I'm going to talk about the 12 steps. But when I was a kid, we lived in a lower middle class neighborhood in Chicago. And if you're, I'm going to say I'm in my early 70s. So if you're at that age, you know what that means, lower middle class. It means you had enough, you had food on the table, you had shoes, you had clothes, we had a car, but we didn't have a lot of extra money. And my parents scrimped a lot because they sent me to a Catholic school. My mom was Jewish, my dad was Catholic. So her side of the family disowned her. So that's just part of who I am. My dad was a very loving, spiritual man who was in the Catholic Church. I was raised Catholic. The priest at the church didn't know my mom was Jewish because she made sure we went to everything. And one time asked, do you need to go to confession? And my mom said, I'm not Catholic. So he had never noticed that. That's how involved. I came from a very loving family. I learned integrity, which coincides with one of our steps from the new book. I learned integrity. I learned work ethic. And at the same time, this doesn't really work. It's not really belonging in the same sentence, but I'm just going to say, I loved candy. I love sweets. Neither of my parents are compulsive overeaters. My dad was very disciplined in his food. He couldn't understand why you'd want to eat the leftover dessert from the night before for breakfast. When I was up to probably 12 or 13, they called me Beanpole because it's now very ironic because I am very short, but at that time I was tall for my age. And then when I got into high school, I became probably like a size 14, 12, 14, which wasn't heavy, but I had a terrible body image because I compared myself to Twiggy and all the skinny models of that time. I was always a people pleaser. I loved to be around people. I loved to be around children. I always wanted to do things to help other people. So I learned at a very age to be a people pleaser. And at some point in my life, it actually got a little bit too much on the wrong side because I forgot about myself. My parents were not, they were not also alcoholic. However, I had an uncle who died of alcoholism. But because the way I was raised, and I also had an uncle who we were very close to that was an alcoholic, but believe it or not, I did not realize that really until I got into the program. I guess just because we kind of lived our life and my mom and dad just didn't do those things. I was taught to be, to do athletic things. My dad at one time worked at the YMCA and we were blessed. We got to do lots of athletic things. So my disease probably really started getting going in high school, college, and then when I got older, because as soon as I became my own person, I could buy those things. So if I babysat, I could buy those sweet things I wanted. My mom gave us a well-balanced food. This was me. So I know today that I don't have to know how I became a compulsive overeater. For me, it's just acceptance. I don't know that it would do any good to figure out why. Maybe it would for some people, but for me, I know that from a very young age, I liked all the sweet stuff. And so as I got a little bit older, I started gaining weight. And again, though, when I wasn't overweight, I thought I was overweight. So I never had a good body image. After I had my kids, I started gaining more weight. I'm going to bring in another program for just a short time because it is part of my recovery. My husband is a recovering alcoholic. The way that I coped with a lot of things during that very difficult time was food. So I rewarded myself with food because we didn't have a lot of money, but I always had enough to buy some extra stuff. I still have guilt in my heart and my soul because I feel that there were times that I really gave my kids sweet stuff instead of probably what they needed. Because if I was going to have it, I didn't hide it. I will say that I didn't. Most of the time I didn't hide it. So I have, I still have some guilt, even though I've done fourth and fifth step many, many times in my 30 something years. As things got worse, I just kept eating. And I kept eating to the point when I was eating and the food, my choice food was stuffed with sugar. So if I went, then I did start hiding it. So if I went to get gas, I'd buy five of something, not one, but five. And I couldn't tell anybody then that I was doing it. By the time I got to program, and what got me to program was I had gone to, so I got into Al-Anon first. And I had a sponsor in Al-Anon that also was an OA. And I could never, I didn't know we would go out after we went to meetings on Friday nights, we'd go to this restaurant and my friend would always have salad. And I couldn't figure out, like, she never ordered anything sweet. Incidentally, there's somebody that wants to be admitted. I know you have to see who that is, but I can see the person's name, the number. So anyways, what happened was I started talking to her and she said, well, Karen, I'm an OA too. Okay. Well, and that's why you have salad. Well, here's what I do. The salad's part of my dinner. So she wasn't a person that just ate three times. Her food plan was that she did this on the nights like Friday night. She saved her vegetable or whatever for Friday night. I'm like very intrigued with this because see, I knew that other program worked. I saw it working in my husband. I saw it working in me. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to try OA. Now, when I got there, how was I eating? I was going, getting those sweet things, but now I was in the car and I was crying. I was sobbing because I couldn't stop eating them. So I didn't want to eat them, but I kept buying them and I kept eating them. So I went to my first OA meeting and it was a day of reflection at a hospital in a suburb near Chicago. And it kind of blew me away because people would talk about, you know, what do they have between breakfast and lunch? Well, I drink coffee or I drink water, you know, I put a lemon in it, make it a little fancy, whatever. I just, you know, it was very intriguing for me. So that's when I started coming into the program. And where I was at when I first came in, I'll break it down into those three areas. So physically, my weight was fluctuating. It was going higher than those, you know, I said I was relieved of 50 pounds. It kept going higher, and then I would get, it didn't go a lot higher, but it probably went to like 55 over my weight today. Then I would get really nervous, and then I would go on some kind of diet, and then it would be okay for a while. So I know all of you can relate to that yo-yo going up and down. And I tried every diet that was available. And the one that I remember so crazy was that cabbage diet. I don't know if you guys know that. So, you know, some of my friends in Bunko, they were all trying it. So, yeah, sure, I'm going to try it. None of that worked. None of it worked. I wore clothes that were longer, like blouses that were longer to hide the rest of my body. I didn't like to go swimming. I love to swim, but I didn't want anybody to see me in a bathing suit. I didn't want anybody to see me in shorts. I did go to Jazzercise, so I was exercising, but I wanted to do more, and I just didn't, because I was embarrassed sometimes about what you would have to do to wear to go to some of those things. I think the saddest thing, and I know somebody I used to sponsor, is not going swimming because you don't know how you're going to look in a bathing suit. I just think it's so sad that so many people have missed out on that. And one thing it calls to my mind, after I was in recovery, you can go to the public school and they have a lane if you live in whatever your district is, and you can swim. And at the other side of the pool was water polo. And somebody said to me, how can you swim with the water polo kids on the other side? I said, they're teenage boys. Do you really think they're going to be looking at me? At that time, I was like in my 50s. They could care less about what I look like. So that was good for me after I was in recovery, because I knew I could do that. On the mental side, I cried a lot alone. One of the things that I was most ashamed of that I did with my kids is they were in every activity possible. Now, there's nothing wrong with involving your kids in activities. But I guess I thought if I could take them and have them go to dancing, my daughter go to dancing lesson, my son go to any sport they want to, be in Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts, just constantly go. I wouldn't have to think about my problem. I wouldn't have to think about the alcoholic. And I would just have to think about where was the next place I was going to go with my kids. I was also in two car accidents during that time. Both of the car accidents I was in were not, I never got a ticket because really they weren't my fault. One was a guy that ran through a stop sign. One was a truck that ran through a stop light. By the grace of God, the first one, I ended up in the hospital, but it was minor. I had a concussion. The second one, this truly was God watching over me. My two boys were in the car. It was before we had our daughter. And a truck ran into her car, and none of us got hurt. We all had to go to the hospital to make sure, but we could have died. And I always feel that my brain was somewhere else. I didn't know how to be in today. So that's how my mentality was. I would never ask for help. I had foot surgery when my husband and I were separated, and I had to go to a reunion. I didn't ask my parents. They lived 10 minutes away. I did ask a friend of mine who was going to pick me up. I didn't have any stairs in the front because our stairs had broken. Of course, I didn't tell anybody that. I didn't tell anybody any of those things. My son, who is now in his 40s, he was about 13. Instead of asking my mom and dad to do the shopping, I would send him on his bike to go to 7-Eleven. I was full of pride, and I had no humility. And I was humiliated. And so I couldn't ask anybody for help. I isolated a lot, started isolating from my friends. Now, it doesn't mean I didn't bring my kids where they needed to go, but my real friends, I didn't tell them how bad things were. One of the girls that I worked with did know because she was a teacher assistant, and I probably could have lost my job. At lunchtime, we used to have an hour. This was in the olden days. We had an hour you could go off campus. And I would go off campus. I would go home. I'd get in under the covers, and I would call in sick for the rest of the day. My friend that I worked with said, Karen, you can't do that anymore. From now on, we're going to lunch together. Oh, and that worked. And I had, and she said, and you have to tell the principal. Thank God, she was my angel. And then spiritually, I just prayed for that person to get sober. I prayed for that God would help me stop eating. I prayed for all my kids' problems, but didn't do a lot about them. Because you need to pray, but you got to do something after you pray. I did not have a good relationship with my higher power. I didn't know how to. So when I got into the program, I told you about my first sponsor. Then after that, I had just a wonderful, wonderful sponsor. I call her. So here was the deal. Call her 5 times a week, Monday through Friday. She didn't take phone calls on the weekend unless somebody was dying. It had to be a real emergency. And I called her 6:45 to 7:00. That was my time. If I missed my time, I had to call the next day. Now, for me in the beginning, that's what I needed. That is not the way my sponsors are today. Because it was so important. I call her. I talk about my food. One of the things that she taught me was when you're going to a restaurant, I think being an OA in recovery, this is my opinion, I should be able to go to a restaurant and still have fun. But I have to be honest. I was just telling a sponsee today, I just texted her, I said, my sponsor would say, take a look at the menu and then make a best possible choice. Because I still should be living my life. And so how is it today? Well, my physical, again, my abstinence is imperfect. I started at a certain food plan. I started with sugar because I thought my sponsor that I picked, of course, had sugar once a day. She had a dessert every day. Well, why wouldn't I pick her? Because you hear people say, if I can do this, you can do this. Well, that didn't work. So then I had to get another sponsor. That is part of my recovery. That wasn't a slip. That was the part of my recovery that said, okay, take another look at your food plan. That's where honesty comes in. So I lost that weight, 50 pounds, and my size is now a 4 or 6. In 2015, at 68 years old, I became a yoga teacher. I don't stand in my head or do any kind of crazy yoga stuff, but I do teach one class a week at a cancer support center, and I go a couple times a week. When I have a problem, this is more the mental part of it. I do ask for help. I have learned to ask for help. How refreshing is that? Because I've had a number of surgeries. I've had a number of things, especially since 2020. I tell somebody, I need your help. I have a very loving, caring husband, but I need more than that. I do need friends. My friends, most of them are in one of those two programs. I do have other friends, but guess what? They're the same kind of people. They're spiritual. They're connected to a higher power. Mentally. If I need to go to a counselor, which I've done many times, I go. Now, when you read you read many of our readings, it says, if you need to go to somebody else, help. Oh, and one of the things of my emotional from the big book, I like this part on page, to me, this is emotional recovery, on page 16, where it says, he's talking about, it's in the chapter, Bill Story. This is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some of you would be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity. But just underneath there is a deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we will perish. But I love the part about levity and fun. If I have to come to a meeting and I am supposed to be somber for that meeting and not laugh at myself, gosh, I love how you guys started. You all joke. And I have learned a lot of that also. A lot of my recovery has also come from attending open AA meetings because we use the same book, and that's beautiful. I'm a pretty flexible person. Both, and I don't mean that just in yoga, but I taught special education for 40 years and or almost 40 years. And so I've always been kind of flexible in the way that I behave. And that is a good thing in this program. Because sometimes when you're dealing with people, you have to be really flexible. Because sometimes you might not like what they're saying or doing. And I don't want to. I learned in program to be assertive, not aggressive, because I used to be very aggressive to get my way because I felt that that was the only way that you would listen to me. And I know today I can be assertive about my views, but I don't have to be aggressive. But I'm not going to ever let anything pass that I feel is prejudiced or misogynistic. I don't let those things pass. That's my program. I speak up, and I will do that to the day that I die. As far as food goes, my food plan today, I'm hypoglycemic. So I eat about 5 times a day. I have 2 sponsors. One sponsor is my food sponsor. I send her my food at the end of the day. I used to send all my food beforehand. For me today, I don't do that. If at some point my sponsor would say, you got to back up and rethink how you're doing your food, I would do that. I'll do tell you what she says, and I'm getting better. I'm sighing because many days she'll say, Karen, you didn't have enough fruits and vegetables. 5 to 6. Where's the 5 to 6 fruits and vegetables? And then sometimes in my head I go, oh, why is she saying this? Well, she's saying that because she's a loving sponsor. And she knows that sometimes, at least in the beginning with her for a number of years, I wasn't always doing that. I need to do that. I have some help. I had heart surgery in 2014 for repair of a valve. And I have some other minor things, but I want to stay healthy. She says, Karen, these are the foods that help you stay healthy. I have to watch my carbs because sometimes I have too many carbs. I need to make sure that I tell somebody on a daily basis what I'm eating. And I have to make sure that person is honest. Today she texted me something and I want to call her because I have a question about it. And I got a little irritated and I thought, no, I have to call her and I have to ask her why she said that. Because otherwise, am I being honest? I'm not being honest with myself and I'm not being honest with her. Let's see what else I said. I eat reasonable portions. I don't really weigh and measure, but for instance, if we're having sweet potatoes, if it's a big sweet potato, I have a half of, this is just examples. I'll have a half of a sweet potato. If I'm going to grab like granola, I take a handful of granola and I put it in my yogurt. That works for me. It might not work for other people. So my food plan is my food plan, and my abstinence is based on my food plan. Some people need very strict food plans. Then that's what you need to do. and you have to be honest. If I wasn't honest, my weight would be going up. There were other medical things that would probably be happening. So when my sponsor asked me something, I tell her, okay, my weight fluctuates between 122 to 125. If it goes over that, then I better watch what's going on. But again, the food plan is just a tiny part of my program, but the abstinence in those three areas is everything. Let's see. Currently, I don't eat sugar. There's a few things that have sugar in them that I might have. My yogurt, sometimes I don't check it, and I know there's a lot of different yogurts. That's just for me. If I question it, I know right away. If I'm having trouble with something and I want it every day, I gotta think about giving that up. My original sponsor said have abstinent food and avoid food. And so a lot of times the avoid food, when it keeps coming back, oh gosh, I want that again today. I just had that yesterday. It probably is going to go to my abstinence. But now I am starting to do more exercising, and I might have to eat more food. I might have to put something in. I'm going to ask her, what would you suggest I do if I get hungry? But I know with my hypoglycemia, I try to carry like an apple and cheese. It's easier to carry like an apple and nuts because cheese doesn't always stay well if it's warm around. And I'm not really good about bringing a little, tote bag with something. So I'm better off bringing an apple and some nuts with. My spiritual recovery is the biggest part of my recovery. It brings me to tears. It's been tears because my higher power has given me a life beyond anything I could possibly imagine, just like in the big book. The connection I have is I talk about God all the time. And we talk about, in my family, we talk about God shots. And there's some other things that people, is it God or is it odd? I'm sure you maybe heard some of those, or maybe you have a different name. There's no coincidences. It's God. I believe all those things. I say them out loud. Now, some people I know, like my sister sometimes is not comfortable when I say that. And at first I kind of hesitated and then I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. This is who I am. I'm not preaching out of a book. I'm not preaching the OA, but I am. This is my, and I love when we say our authentic self. I believe that God is next to me all the time. And I'm in a prayer group. The prayer group that I'm in is all program people. We started during COVID. We each read a different book from program, and then we talk. So it's actually like, it's actually another 12-step meeting. That is when my God became so much more powerful. I choose to call my higher power God, although I do a lot of times call him HP, and then there's a personal joke in my family. I used to say that a lot to one of our sons who happens to be a doctor, and he said, Mom, I'd say HP. He says, who do you mean, Harry Potter? So now I like to say that just as kind of a funny joke. Because you're supposed to be happy and goof around. That's what my higher power. He wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And in the morning, I learned from another OA person. I asked my higher power, what is your will for me today? Do I remember every day? Nope. But if I keep talking to program people and I keep coming to meetings and I keep reading the literature, then I'll remember. I sponsor, and I do have the one sponsor I told you, the food sponsor. I have another sponsor I talk to once a week, and we work on the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And we read all different kind of things. We read through the big book, whatever pulls us in that day. But we talk a lot about character defects and what's going on and how we can change those situations in our life. I already talked about going to the counselor. The other big thing in my program is I used to be God first, everybody else, and then me. That's not the way I live my life anymore. God first, then me, then everybody else. Some people would say that was selfish, but that's their problem. That's not my problem. If I do not take care of myself physically, mentally, and spiritually, I am no good for anybody else. And I have seen that in my life. I have seen what has happened in my life when I don't do that. And sometimes I get caught up in doing good stuff for other people, and that's wonderful. But if I get so caught up I can't do for myself, I'm not going to be working a good program. And one of the sayings that my husband bought a card once for me that said, "You are but one support for others." And I love that because I am but one support for others. I can't be everything to everybody. I want to be sometimes because I feel like I should be Superwoman. And women are pretty amazing. Of course, this month, we especially salute all women. Sorry, guys, I just had to say that. I have learned to let go. I let go of people, places, and things. There are people in my life, in our lives, that have actually disowned our family because of some of our isms. That's their loss. We've made our amends. They've chosen not to allow us in their family. Can't do anything about it. If I stay in yesterday and I stay in that stuff, I'll go back to food. Or I'll go back to some kind of behavior. Or I'll lose my higher power. So I have to say, they're losing out on us because I have a really wonderful, good family. And in our hearts, we would like that to be different. But it's not going to be, at least at this point. There's a saying in yoga, let go of things that do not serve you. And that's what I try to think of when I let go of things. As far as food, when you're going somewhere, I don't believe I have to explain it to anybody. Now, there are people that'll keep asking you. And, okay, I made this dessert for you. Yeah, no, thank you. I don't eat that. I made it just for you. I'll have a cup of coffee or a Diet Coke. I made it for you. I just don't eat. I'm not going to eat it. And at some point, they might get mad. Again, that's their problem. And I don't. That's not being. What's the word? I can't think of the word. It doesn't matter. I'm just sticking up for myself.
Selfish.
Selfish. Thank you. The best example, I talk about this all the time when I give my story. When I used to teach, my kids would bring me stuff. And I taught in grammar school, and my last teaching was in high school, and I just loved it. I team taught. So my kids would bring me things that I couldn't eat, sugar things. And I had to explain numerous times, and then they got it. I would get, I have a table flat, and I've also explained this to some of the teachers. If you fill this table up like this, and it was filled with all kinds of whatever that sweet thing is, I would eat all of it, and I'd be looking for some more. And it's real funny to see people's reactions, because sometimes they'll be like, okay. It's a pretty good visual. But my students, because they got it, love them so much. They would bring, I said, these are the things you can bring me. You can bring me apples. You can bring me nuts. You can bring me pencils. But they bring me fruit. And they bring me nuts or raisins. Because they listened and they accepted who I was. People know that I don't do sugar. Most people. My niece, who I love dearly, she has 5 kids and I'm like the grandma. And she'll say, oh no, it's almost like she's protective. Karen doesn't eat that. If you're going somewhere for a party, I bring fruit and or veggies because I know I can eat them. We had a 50th anniversary party in 2020, right before COVID. And my daughter helped with the ordering the food and stuff. And she was mad at the two sons because she said, Mom and Dad don't eat sugar. So we can't just have a cake. We have to make sure we have fruit for them. So we did. All I know is I work this every day and I work it really hard, but it's very imperfect. I've made lots of mistakes, but I've never left. I'm very tenacious, as I believe everybody in 12-step programs is, because you keep coming back even when things aren't perfect. I love the word tenacity. One of my counselors said, Karen, you're very tenacious, and I kept that as part of who I am. Find out what your food plan is. Get a sponsor you really like. Get somebody that you can be honest with. If you need somebody really strict and, you know, toes the line, then get a sponsor like that. I'm not that kind of sponsor. I'm going to be honest with you, but I feel that my God wants me to be passionate and kind to myself. So why wouldn't I be passionate and kind to the people that I sponsor? Yesterday we saw the movie, The Whale. And I don't know who saw it, and I don't know why I've thought of this right now. But you know, we are all human beings and we all have to find our way. But we all need each other. And when you're sponsoring, this is my opinion, I just think we have to be as kind to people as we want them to be kind to us. And again, I'm just going to say, the spiritual part of the program has brought me to my knees, but it's also brought me to my life. And I am filled with awe that my higher power wanted me to have this. And so I have to give it away. And I'm just, I am very humbled to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. We really appreciate it. I got a lot out of it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.